Record. We are recording.
Got it.
About Parshat Mishpatim this week, which is all very technical, all these laws. And this year is going to be very technical and very diktok oriented. I hope it works. So hopefully it will make some sense. It's all based on Rav Kopperman's Shuto Shel Mikra. It's David knows what's Michala and Rav Kopperman. Right?
Yeah, he's called Rav Kopperman, but it's spelled Kopperman.
Yeah, which is why I'm not sure how to say it correctly. Yes, it is always pronounced as Nikudota with a
Koop. Right.
Okay, so I'm going to call him Kopperman.
Maybe that's the English is Kopperman.
He definitely spells it in English as Kopperman. But this is Pshuto Shel Mikra, where he talks about what the pshat means in religious sense. Why is the text of the Torah the way it is? We're not supposed to read it that way, but we'll have to look at that. So we're talking about Mishpatim has the laws of Shomrim, which we translated as custodian, but I like the word Bailey, the legal term. Someone who
what
has
is
possession
it?
Of an object, a Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-E.
Like a bailer and a Bailey?
The bailer, I guess, is the Machid. And the Bailey is a shomer, someone who has possession of that ownership in some sense. Whether you're renting it, borrowing it, I'm watching it for you, I'm doing you a favor, I'm being paid to keep this thing in my house. Those are all the shomerim, Baileys. And this is shomerchina. Yitain ish el re'ehu kesef o kelim lishmar. I'm going to give you the translation from Art Scroll because I'm going to disagree with it. Okay, this is Art Scroll's translation. If a man shall give money or vessels to his fellow to safeguard, gunav mi beit ha'ish, and it is stolen from the house of the man, if the thief is found, he shall pay double. If the thief is not found, then the householder shall approach the court. Notice it's Elohim. This is not Shem Hashem Elohim. This is Elohim in the sense of judges. Right? That he has not laid his hand on his fellow's property.
Meaning, I wasn't the one who took it, somebody else stole it? What is that statement?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Oh.
The basic halakha is that a shomer chinam needs to swear not just that they didn't take the object that you claim it was stolen, but they weren't negligent in it at all. That they did the appropriate watching, whatever that is for a shomer chinam, and they didn't use it for their own personal purposes. So, lo shalachti adom lechrei eilu, who's broader than I didn't steal it? I wasn't negligent. Takes that, okay? He has to approach and testify to that in court. Al kol devar kesha, for every item of liability, al shor, al chamor, al sel, simla, regarding whether an ox or a sheep, a donkey, a sheep, or a garment, al kol aveda, regarding any lost item, asher yomar ki huzeh, about which he says, this is it, ad helohim yavo devar shnehem, to the court shall come both of their claims. Asher yashiyun elohim yishalim shnehem re'ehu. And whomever the court finds guilty shall pay double to his fellow. I've got an Art Scroll.
Wait, who's the second person for the in Chet? The second person
that
is the
exactly that is a good question. They're not specifying. Right? They're trying to figure out what this means. Devosh Tvar Shneham. But it sounds the way they're reading it, they're two different really halachot here. They're the first one. Which is Hiten Isha Reyehu, right? If you give money, then if the thief is stolen, then the thief has to pay double. And if the thief is not found, then the Balabayit has to go to the court and testify that he wasn't negligent. And there's this idea of Kol Devar Pesha. Any item of liability, any civil liability case, the court has to decide between the parties, and the liable party has to pay double.
So is that like, it's kind of like, that almost sounds like a title and almost like Vav and Zayin should go underneath that. Anyone has to pay double. If it's a case of a thief, then he has to pay double. Or like, it almost sounds like this is a very, Chet is like very generic.
This is very generic, right. That's kind of my point there, that it sounds, at least the way they're translating it, that these are separate things. That the first case is a subcase of this Kol Devar Pesha, right? Kol Devar Pesha is Pasuk Chet, and that's every case. That's
Pesha. Except it says Shnehem seems to refer to the two above.
Right.
It could be. But then what's Kol Devar Pesha? Now, the drush about this, again, the halacha of it, you know, knowing what the Torah Shmuel Pes says that, yes, the fact that the two of them are, these psukim go together, the juxtaposition of them, is that this Kol Devar Pesha doesn't mean literally every civil case, every item, every event, an item of liability, as our school translates it. It's only talking about the case where you have a shomer who claims the item was stolen. And in that case, whoever court finds guilty shall pay double is telling us the halacha of a toin tanat ganav, someone who claims that a claim of theft, literally, and is found to be lying. The shomer claims that it was stolen, claims that it was not stolen in his house. Toin tanat ganav kaganav has the same, that person has the same penalties as an actual ganav who has to pay double. We know that from beforehand.
So who's
if,
the
if
both
it was stolen,
then?
The thief pays double. What?
So who's the both then? One is the ganav and one is the shomer, and they're both being treated like ganavim.
That's a good question. Now we're going to look at that because that's not the way we're going to end up with. I mean, that is exactly the question we need to answer. Hold that thought, because there isn't two people in that second one, right? Who's the shnehem? Whoever finds guilty, and whichever of those finds guilty. It's not like we have the thief and the shomer suing each other. It's the two separate, you know, the two separate realities. One is it was stolen, one it wasn't. But the bottom line is, the halakha out of all this is toin tanat ganav kaganav. Making a claim of theft and lying is penalized as though it was a theft.
But it almost seems like it has to be one unit, because it doesn't tell you what happened. It says he goes to court and he swears. And then what?
That's so a good
the
point.
Second part,
we are missing a lot of pieces here.
Yeah.
So we really are relying on the Torah Shebel Peh to fill in a lot of details. But I want to set this up, that this is a very hard, you know, it sounds, you can read the words. The words seem to make reasonable sense, but we're missing a lot here. We don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So those are, okay, so if you have a little more to go talk about to actually figure out what piece we're going to put together here. But here's the Gemara says flat out, read that Tashlume Kefil. The rule of Tashlume Kefil of paying double, no heget bein beganav bein betoin tanat ganav, applies in these two cases. That's the only place where you play double. Normal civil liability, you pay the amount of damages. For geneva, theft, you pay double. And for toin tanat ganav, meaning falsely claims that it was stolen, also pays double.
Wait, sorry. So if you didn't falsely claim, but you were the shomer and it was damaged, then you only have to pay just for the item itself, not double.
Wait, if you was damaged and you were negligent, yeah.
Then it's just single. Yeah. The reason that it's double here is because the ganav has a special halacha just for him. That it's double.
Right. Got to have a special with double, and so claiming that you and it was stolen becomes a. It becomes like a gun.
But what if it just was lost? I mean.
Okay, so that's right. So shomer kinam is putter in the case of aveda.
Oh.
He still has to take. Okay, he has to take it of shavua that he wasn't shaleach. He was not negligent. He's negligent. He pays the value of the item.
And if he takes
not
the
double.
Shua, then we believe him.
We believe
right?
him. Right.
He takes it, they believe him. Okay.
Takes it, and then the case is over. We don't have evidence one way or the other.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the bottom line. So that, in other words, the alkol devar pesha is referring to the previous pasuk, that if, right, the shomer claims lo shalach yado mecharev. The Torah claims I was not negligent. It turns out he lied, meaning that it wasn't still, you know, not negligent includes this, you know, basically swearing that I don't have it anymore because it was stolen from me. I can't return it to you. But it wasn't because I was a fine shomer. But if he's lied and it wasn't stolen, it's still there in his house, then if you sell him shnayim, then that person, that shomer, needs to pay double. That's a medrash halacha. That's not explicit in the pasuk. Again, that's not necessarily the pshat of the pasuk, but it's the way we understand it. That's the halacha, Torah Shmuel Peh. And the drash and the pshat are not...
Wait, why isn't it pshat?
It doesn't say anything about what happens if the guy's lying, right? It's not obvious what happens. It's, all it says is, if it's not found, and then the shomer swears, now we have this hakol devar pesha, and how does that fit into the previous pasuk?
It just says that, like, the court will decide. Doesn't talk about
I don't see an issue, because it just seems to say what we just said. It applies to everything, animals, dresses, whatever it is. It applies. It doesn't seem jarring.
We're trying to figure out what the Devar Pesha is here. We're assuming that, okay, knowing the halacha, we know that the Devar Pesha means is a case where the guy lied about it.
Oh.
It's not obvious that that's what the Devar Pesha is.
Oh, true.
Right, it doesn't say if it turns out that it wasn't stolen, right? It just ends with this, he takes an oath, right? Or he just testifies in court, doesn't say oath, but that's from another paragraph. That he comes to Elohim, comes to the court, says, lo shalach yado, and then kind of fizzes out. But we expect that. I mean, we expect the Torah Shmuel Peh to tell us what the text means in terms of halacha. And I'm going to point that out. Because we have this classic example of that early in the parsha of ayin tachat ayin.
Ah.
Lex talonis. Right? Not in the law of the tooth. Right? Pasuk says ayin tachat ayin, shen tachat shen, yad tachat yad, regel tachat regel. And we obviously know that it doesn't mean if I poke your eye out, you poke up my eye out. That's not the halacha, as Rashi points out. Sima ein chavero, I blind my fellow, noten lo deme eno. To pay for it. We have to decide how much is this person worth in the market for human beings? And in the absence of an actual market, then the court has to figure out what that means in terms of money. How much is your eye worth?
Right.
Okay. One of the downsides of not having slavery.
Yeah, but isn't that like, when you have like malpractice? I mean, isn't that something that we still do to this day?
Right. No, absolutely.
We talk about damages and physical, and like do that all the time. I mean,
the court has to figure out what an eye is worth and what an arm is worth. But effectively, that's what the court has to decide there. But if it's payment. Okay, cool. In all these cases, yad for yad, kach yad, etc. Below the tzilat Abraham Amash, and don't take out any of these body parts of the punishment. Moshe darsh v'rabotena. That's a drash in the pasuk. Pshat is eye for an eye. Drash is no, don't take that literally. Do it money. Okay, that's part in halacha and Baba Kama. We know that halacha. So we expect that. Okay, the text says these, and the Torah Shmuel Peh, what fills in with what it means, which is fine.
That's the classic example that's given, right?
But for
that's
something,
the classic that is a, example.
But for something like this, right, though, where is, like you're not supposed to read the pshat, then why is it written that way?
Ah, good. That Rav Kuberman wrote about 1,000 pages on that question. Okay, that is what the Sefer Pshuta Shel Mikra is. Again, it's about 1,000 pages long. I can't find it in print, so I've been photocopying little bits at a time, or rather printing it out so that I have it as a PDF. This is a chapter in that Sefer about our Toin Tanak Ganav. Okay, we're going to look at the pshat of this and try to figure out what it means. Why does the Torah write it this way? And there's a specific point about that. Rav Kuberman points out that Art Scroll doesn't translate pshat like Rashi. Art Scroll says that they always translate like Rashi, but Rashi definitely reads it, and pshat is very differently. I'm going to look through that. We're going to go through that in some detail here.
I didn't know that about Art Scroll. That's what they say. They translate
the introduction. The introduction, if we pull out the Art Scroll Chumash, and we look at the introduction.
This is like a blue one?
Oh. Yeah.
The stone?
Blue one. You see that? Translation. The new translation of this volume attempts to render the text as our sages understood it. Where there are differing interpretations, we follow Rashi, the father of commentators. The study of Chumash has been synonymous with Chumash Rashi for 9 centuries, etc. Okay, so basically that's their introduction.
Okay.
They're going to go there. That's not the way they do it here. So we're going to look at Rashi. We do it one step at a time. I'm going to go back and forth. Here's our pasuk, right? He ten ish al re'ehu kelim kesef o kelim lishmar. If a person gives to his fellow money or things, lishmar, to guard, v'gunavi beit ha'ish, and is stolen from the house of the person. Rashi on that says, gunavi beit ha'ish l'fi devarav. That's the first point.
He claims it. You can't read it as was.
Was stolen, because we don't know, because that's an epistemological problem. Okay, we know what epistemological means. As in, this is the theory of knowledge. Relating to knowledge. How do we know something is true? The answer is we don't. Rashi is assuming this is a court case. We don't know what happened. The definition. Right? The owner comes and says, I want my thing back. And the bailee says, it was stolen. That's all we have. In other words, this whole paragraph is about the toin ta'anat ganav. What happens?
You think it has to be because there's no other way to know?
Right. Because we can't start out knowing that it was stolen.
Right.
All we have is the claim that it was stolen.
Assuming like you didn't see somebody go and like open up his window and take it out and run away. Like we're assuming that.
Well, I did. So this becomes relevant if there are witnesses here. But right now, when the case comes before the court, I have he says and he says. We don't have, he said. One guy says, he agreed to watch my dog for a week. And then the watcher says, I did, but someone stuck to my house and took it. Now what?
Or someone must have come. All he says is it's missing.
Okay,
someone
there you go.
Must
have, right? The door was broken into and whatever the case is. That's what we have before, okay?
Fingerprints.
So this,
the dog didn't bark.
That's right. Okay? So that, so first off, so if at some point they find the thief and we decide halakhically that this was the thief, then the thief pays the standard kfel just like everyone to the owners of it. But, the thief's not found, then the case comes before El Elohim. They're called Elohim here, not just Shoftim, because of that epistemological problem. They have to be like God. They have to determine truth. That's what the judges are there for. Even though they're human beings, they're the ones, once they declare what's happened, they have just determined what the truth is. And the halachic procedure for that is that the shomer testifies under oath, takes a shvuah, wasn't negligent, and that it was stolen to best of his knowledge. Again, the fact that shvuah isn't till the next paragraph, but testified. So, yimimatzei haganav, so if the thief is found, and then yishalem, and then Rashi adds the words haganav shnayim, which isn't necessarily obvious. He has to pay double. Who's the he? It's not the shomer for having been stolen, it's the thief. That may be, you may have assumed it was true, have to pay double to the owners. But this is still Rashi. Im lo yimatzei ganav, the thief isn't found, uvaha shomer hazeh, and this shomer came, shehu baal habayit. So when the pasuk says, v'nikrav baal habayit el hohim, baal habayit here is the owner of the house where the thing was stolen from, or claimed to have been stolen from. That's the shomer here. Has to come to the court. The Nikrav Dayanim goes to the judges. Ladun imzeh, to settle this case, Ushava Shalosh Shalach Yado B'Shalom, that the Shomer says, I was not negligent. And they make the point, Nikrav Balabait Elohim is Krevazu Shavuahi. That's what the expression Nikrav Elohim means, to testify under oath. And the point here, though, is Imlo Yotze Ganav B'Nikrav, Rashi translates Uvah HaShomer Hazeh in the past tense. This is a Mizrahi explaining Rashi. Nikrav Balabayit Klamar Hu Kavar Nishba Tavar Shalosh Shalach Yado. Meaning it already happened. Nikrav Balabayit Elohim is the past perfect. That's where it gets a little more complicated. So Artsville translates it.
Nikrav is he had already, it's like the Nif'al, but it's in the past.
Yes, it was
like Hayah
Nikra. Right. So Imlo Yotze Ganav B'Nikrav Balabayit, that if the thief is not found, then the Shomer has to go to court. I say that's not right. That doesn't make sense. How long do you wait to find the thief? I mean, the thief's not found. I say no. That happens before. That's right at the beginning. And that the Nikrav Balabayit is part of the condition. The thief hasn't been found, and the Balabayit has already gone to court, taken his oath. Then we have Al Kol Devar Pesha.
Oh. Not
if then, it's all if. And then we get to the end here of Ada Elohim Yavo Devar Shnehem.
Oh.
So we have two different El Elohims here. First case, where the guy says it was stolen, he testifies under oath, the Shavua, we say, fine, you don't pay. Then we have the question of a Devar Pesha in Pasuk Chet, and we'll figure out what that is. This point is that Vinikrav, that Vav there is the Vav HaKibur. And it had been, that, right? That if it was the past imperfect, the preterite, like most Vayomer, Vayedaber, all of that, then it would be Vanikarev. So it's passive also, and he was brought, meaning he was sued. Okay? So it's Nikrav is the Avara Pashut, which Rashi always understands as the past perfect. Before the current action, that's when this happened.
So it's not a full sentence. It's just the if part.
This is still all if. Not like Rashi said, if then he swears. No. If he's already sworn and we haven't found the thief yet, and we have a Devar Pesha coming up in the next pasuk.
Okay.
And this idea that the Avar Pashut, without the Vav HaHipuch, it means the past perfect, is important because we see that later in the parsha. There's a paragraph after all the Mishpatim, where it says, where it goes back to narrative. The Moshe Amar, Alei Al Hashem. Hashem said to Moshe with the Amar, not Vayomer El Moshe. Moshe Amar, come up. Ascend Mount Sinai, Atavaron Zabevihu, Beshivim Mizigne Israel, all of them. And Rashi says, Bel Moshe Amar, Parshazu Nemra Koda Maserat Dibrot. That narrative, the end of our Parsha here, actually happened way back in last week's Parsha. And Hashem had told Moshe to come up, in contrast to the Vayomer, when Moshe goes back up for 40 days and 40 nights. This paragraph here was just a one-time up, and he comes with the Zakenim, and he has this vision of God. That's all beforehand. So Amar had gone, Bayomer had said, rather, Bayomer, he said. Same thing, too. The Nikrav Balabayit Elohim means if the thief will not have been found and the householder had already been made to approach the court, he'd already been sued and already testified. All the conditions.
But how do you know that he'd been sued? Because it sounds like he's coming out of his own volition, because they're not even.
Oh, I'm separating that because Nikrav is passive. It's not by Yikrav he came.
He's been summoned already.
Nikrav, he was made to come close.
Okay.
I don't know that makes a whole lot of difference. But presumably, that's what's happening, is that he's not going to come spontaneously. He needs to be summoned. Okay, that's what Nikrav. He is brought. He had been made to come both.
Well, I could just imagine if I was supposed to watch someone's dog and one morning I woke up and it wasn't there, I would freak out and go say, like, I don't know what happened. I don't know. But okay, this makes more sense.
Okay, right. You wouldn't rush out and try to buy it. You know, the joke about the old lady is flying on LL to Israel with her dog. You know this joke. And
no.
He's in a little carrier and leaves him in the baggage compartment and says, and be careful, that was my dog for 15 years. So when they land at Ben Gurion, baggage pulls it out and the dog's dead. They're horrified because this little lady was so worried about her dog. So what they look at it, it's pretty generic. The dogs look all the same. So they rush out and they buy an identical dog. They put it in the crate and they bring it out. By the time they're delaying her in customs, she comes out and they bring her in her little doggy carrier, the little dog in there who's yapping at her, looks so happy, and she screams and faints. And then comes to and said, it's a miracle. I was bringing him to Israel to bury him here. And he came back to life.
That's good.
Okay, so if you're watching somebody's dog and the dog is missing, then yes, you can rush out and buy a new one. And no one will know the difference. Anyway. Okay, so the way to read all of this is that Rashi assumes that the Shavuot Shomrim, what's called the oath that Shomer was not negligent, that the egg was stolen, that oath is already done. It's already been the case there. So Shomer is not liable to pay. We've accepted that as the truth. Now the police catch the thief, first pasuk, imatea ganav, then the thief pays double to the owner. That's what's above. If the thief's not found, imatea ganav, then the crab about bayit Elohim, and he already had the case beforehand about that he already sworn and been declared innocent. Then when the events of pasuk chet, next pasuk, so it's not a separate issue, it's the same thing. Then the consequence is in pasuk chet, ad Elohim yavod devar shnehem, that they come back to the court about what's happening. So what's the al kol devar pesha? Answer is that next pasuk. In Yimatei Shakram B'Shavuato, there comes evidence that he had lied. The Ye'idu Edim Shalhu Atzmo Ganavo. That they come, so when the pasuk says, Kol Devar Pesha, literally it's Devar Pesha, a word of iniquity, perjury. At all, short of a chamor, and why it has all these things that the Gemara is talking about. Akoyde Asher Yomar, about which the witnesses say, Ki Huzeh, it's this is it. That thing that you said was stolen is still in your house. That's the Bar Pesha.
Mm-hmm.
And Ad Halhim is the Yavod Devar Shehem, and the two of them now are the two parties, the witnesses and the Shomer.
Oh. So we've just introduced a whole other party that's not even mentioned in the Pshat.
Yeah.
Or,
right. Rashi's saying this is Pshat. The only way to read Pshat is that now, after this happened, now we have a Dvar Pesha. We have a claim of a word of Pesha, of wrongness here. In other words, somebody's lied.
Is Dvar Pesha something that we see in like halacha regarding witnesses? Is that like a phrase?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. It's not familiar to me.
That's a good question. Right. Well, do we see it anywhere in connection with anything else? Devar Pesha.
I mean, the word Devar means word, doesn't also mean thing. How do you want to read that? So I don't know the answer. We can look that up. So if you keep reading Rashi here, when it says, Asher Yershun Elohim Yeshalem Shnayim L'Rehu, Lamzeh HaKadub, this teaches us, Shatoim B'tikodan Lomer Nignat Temeno, that someone who claims that something was stolen, the nimsa shuhu atzmo ganavo, and found that that person had actually taken it for themselves, v'shalem tashlume kefel, has to pay double. Koin tanak ganav, v'shalem kefel, is not a drush, that's from the pshat of the pasuk. Shalim Steinreich. When it happened, this man said Nishbab Achar Kach Bo Edim, as we just said. First he testified, and then the witnesses come. And that's what Asher Yomarti who's there. And it says, you know, when it is said that this is it, that phrase there, which was hard to translate, the Pshuto Rashi says, here's Pshat, Asher Yomar Ha'ed. The witness comes. The Ed here has got to be two witnesses, just luckily. Who zesh nishba to Allah, that this thing that you testify, you swore about, harehi eslecha, still there. So it's still in your living room. Adhei danim yavo devar shnehem, then the judges have to decide what's going on. The way I would translate that, all these two, Kim.
This is nice, Ava.
I summarize it here, okay? Not art scroll. If a man, I mean, the same language as art scroll does, if a man shall give money or vessel to his fellow safeguard, and he claimed that it had been stolen from his house. If the thief is found, he or the thief shall pay double. If the thief is not found, and the householder had been brought to court to testify that he had not laid his hand on his fellow's property, and that there's a claim of perjury, whether an ox, a donkey, or sheep, a garment, or any lost item, about which the witnesses say, this is it, the item is still there, to the court shall come both their claims. Whoever the court shall find guilty shall pay double to his fellow.
So here, wait, perjury means when someone speaks out against what someone else did? Like, he did this?
Perjury, someone lies under oath. Perjury means lying under oath.
Is that right?
Am I using that word here?
So, claims in the very beginning, why don't you have there swears? Oh, that's in the next pasuk?
What?
Well, the claim here is the original owner.
Amar. Oh, so.
Oh no, you're right.
No, it's go back to the pasuk. Where's the pasuk? Sukim.
Here's the sukim. You can Israel because of Hilly Mishmar, right? That's the setting up the case.
And now the Gunavni Beta ish. Right.
And then the Krabat Abad means he had, in this case, right. And he had already come to court, which we said implies that he had already testified under oath.
But so the Shnehem is the aid and the Bailey. So the aid is going to pay twice. If the court believes the Bailey, the aid.
Ah, thank you. That is the Chiddush that we're aiming at. That is important. Okay. Right. Sam, whoever finds, now I got a case of two people, and one of them is going to pay double. That's Rashi. I said that's an unexpected direction, but Phil's already figured this out.
Ta-da.
Okay? Asher Yomar Zeh. Right? Asher Yomar Ha'ed, Ki Hu Zeh, Sinish Bata Allah. We said that, right? I'm continuing the Rashi. That the witness says that this thing that you swore about, Harehu Eslacha, is still in your house. Ada Dayanim Yavo Devar Shnehem, the two of them come before the court, and they will investigate the witnesses. If we uphold their testimony, their rights, their kosher witnesses, then the shomer is declared guilty, and that shomer pays double to the original owner. And if we define that the witnesses are lying, we find that they are Edim Zomamim, right? Scheming witnesses, literally.
Scheming?
They have a scheme. They're Zomam. They're Zamam Lasot Lachir.
That word is an Eshet Chayil, no?
Chayil?
Zomam? I think it's a Megillat root also.
Zomam? Like S-C-H-E-M-E?
It's also like to plan ahead.
Or scheme.
No, scheme.
Scheme. Okay, yeah, I see scheme.
Yeah.
But I think it's also like to plan ahead, like to...
But it usually has negative connotations.
In this case, it's definitely negative. Yeah, you're probably...
Not always.
You use it in a positive way.
You know, when is scheme positive?
Well, that's the translation.
When you mean plan. That's called Russell's conjugation, right? Like, I'm
planning,
you're scheming, he's conspiring.
Right, but if you can't use the word scheming and
in English, you can't.
Oh, but you're saying Hebrew.
I don't know.
Domain, you could.
Okay. It's possible, yeah. We can put it in, but we're going to look at the
Zamama. Isn't it the Zion of Israel?
Yeah.
Zamama.
Zamama.
Isn't that the Zion? You know, the alphabet.
I can't think of it off my head. Zamaka. Okay, that's it. Yeah, you got a sitter there?
Yeah, I'm going to look it up.
Venture.
Mishlei Perek Lamed Aleph. Zamama Satev Tiachehu. Yes, exactly. He plans on a field. GPS translates. She sets her mind on an estate and acquires it. That's exactly right. That's the same root. She plans her estate, acquires it. So that's positive. We have Phyllis? I think we lost Phyllis. Oh, there we go. Okay. So. Yeah, so Zamasaden in Mishlei in Eid HaChayil is a positive thing, right? She plans on it. But here it's not. So Rashi is saying that this tells us the law of Eidim Zomamim, in fact, which it seems that doesn't show up until Sefer Devarim, right? In Parshat Shoftim, where we have the laws of Eidim Zomamim. We're going to look at that. Verse 18. Yakum Eid Hamas Be'ish Lanot Bo Sarah. If a wicked witness should come up against a person to declare bad things about him, the Amdushan Hashem Asher Lahim Ariv, and then the two people who are arguing, again, the Shneihem, it's the witness and the accused, will come b'fnei Hashem, b'fnei HaKohanim v'Hashoftim, and they will come before the court. He said again, since the Elohim, the Kohanim, the Shoftim, Asher Yubayim Nehem, that will be in those days. The Shuav Shoftim Heitev, and they will research it closely. B'nei et Sheker Ha'ed Sheker Inav V'Achiv, and it turns out the witness is a lion.
There's a question, where does the Hashem, is that because Safari had replaced Elohim? Like, what does that really say? In Yud Zion.
Well, that's a good question. That's worth looking when we get to Parsha Shoftim, we can talk about it.
Okay, because here we specifically, it's Elohim, like it's not Hashem. It's just.
Right. I'm saying, and here it's not Elohim, it's Elohim, meaning judges. Here, this is the Snei Hashem, because this is in Devarim, which talks about how the Beit Din has to be at the base, near the Beit HaMikdash and the centralization and all that. That's kind of related to Sefer Devarim. And what the Kohanim are doing here is another question as well. That's separate question. But the bottom line is the Shoftim has to decide, and they decide the witness is lying. And you do to the witness what they had planned to do to the accused. That's our case, right? If the accused, if the showman was found guilty, he would have to pay double because he would consider him like a ganav. So Ganav pays double, therefore the Shomer who's guilty pays double, therefore the Eidim Zomamim have to pay double. Okay, so. But we are terrible. Come back and you wipe it. And they says that, he eggs the Zomamim because it says, I Elohim Yavo Devar Shnehem. That the two of them come together, but Arsher Yeshuna Elohim Yashleim Shem Lerehu. And whoever of those two are found guilty has to pay double. So that can't be the case of the owner and the Shomer because either the Shomer is found guilty or the Shomer is found not liable, then the Baal doesn't have to pay double to the Shomer for in that case. The case where one of the two parties is going to end up paying the Kefel, that's the case of an Eidim Zomamim case, where you've got the witness versus the accused, and one of them is going to end up being penalized.
So it's a little more like Shloshtam, not Shnehem. Well, Shnehem is the two sides, not the two people.
Right, the two sides.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and so the plural and singular goes back and forth. The aid always needs plural, and the same thing that the are always plural, even there's one there that's just a Torah and Gemara idiom. Okay. So that's fascinating, and that's puts it together. And again, that's what you say, that's what Sip Shuto. That's the way to read this pasuk. We read this whole paragraph. And he basically turns it from a discussion of laws of tort, of Shomrim and Baileys and all that, to a discussion of laws of perjury. It really seems to switch the underlying message of the whole paragraph around. So Kuberman looks at, tries to understand what that means, the philosophy of halacha. That's what we're doing here. We're doing mishpach shavah here. We're not so much dealing with the halacha side of it. So this is all of Kuberman. So the underlying basis for the rules that Hashem has set here, we have a question. Mara anotea Torah machtiva l'Moshe Rabbeinu. What did God, who writes the text of Torah? That was your question. Why is the Peshat so complicated? Why not write things out simply? If that's what we're supposed to learn from it, why not write it out? Why did the author of the Torah be fit to intermesh this whole topic of Edim Zomim, false witnesses, kechelik mahuti, like a substantial part, tosuget abba shomrim, as part of the whole discussion of the shomrim? Why add that bar pesha, and then Asher Yishnet, one of the two will pay double? Izoladat, we should know. We assume that when we shiluv, I translate is intermesh. We blend together
like
two
different.
Integrate. Is that a good word, shiluv?
That's what they
integrate
talk about.
Two topics. In Torah Shabbatab. In the text, Ke'edim Zomim, the Toin Tanak Ganav, like we have here, we have the Edim Zomim, the false witnesses, and the Toin Tanak Ganav, the Shomer who claims that it was stolen, in our case. Me'id k'me'a edim is absolute proof, like the testimony of 100 witnesses. Ki shorish echad b'geza mishutaf v'sehem. Clearly that they have some underlying principle in common. That's what we're assuming. There must be some reason behind this. Reb Sacha called, Moseh Torah l'chadesh l'amed, that the bottom line, the Torah wants to tell us, The chiddush here that we learn is that claiming that someone was stolen counts as being as though that person had actually stolen it and therefore pays kefel, just like a thief. That's the chiddush here in the halacha here. The same mahayan nechutz lamed. So why does the Torah feel obligated to teach us shim edim yuzamu, that if there's a case of edim zomimim, false witnesses, shagam hem yasham kefel, that they would also have to pay double? Because we already know that we're going to have that halacha later. Kasher zaman lasot lachiv kein yasalo. It's the same thing. The general rule is whatever the witnesses were going to have happened to the accused, that will be done to them. Nainaya ole al datenu shedin avasitem lo in a tofes mikra pashut zeh. Why would we have thought that this general rule of you will do to the witnesses what they had planned on doing shouldn't apply here? Why did the Torah need to add it here, in Rashi's view? Maya chaser ilu haTorah hayamamtina aluchum esdevarim lachadesh din zeb parshas shokim. What would have been missing if the Torah had waited to parshas devarim, like so many other laws that we don't see until devarim? Al karchenu, we have to say, Omar. So that Rashi, according to Rashi's opinion, who says that this ends up talking about Edim Zomimim, Suget Edim Zomimim, Suget Toin Tanakanev, that these two issues of false witnesses and claiming theft, Shurut Zubazu, are tied together, be so done in their underlying basis, Shedei Achat Muvana Shenit, Hashmiya, that understanding one helps us understand the other. What do they have in common? Nirashe Pirashe Vim Kachu. This is the way Rav Kuberman says, this is what I think is going on. Mishloshe Tuchume Kuat Adam. There are three kinds of things that people do. Machshava Dibur Masa. Thought, speech, action. In those things, Chayva Tara B'yachasim Shebein Adam L'chavero, Raka L'masa. Torah will only punish you, that the court only has power over things that you do. Goes outside your head, is your own business. Intention doesn't matter in halacha, in Beit Din. What you're thinking about is no relevant. The court case is not considering what your state of mind is. I'm just declaring guilty. We can't read your mind. What you do that matters. We're not punished about what you're thinking.
I think this means what you're thinking if you don't take action. But if you act, your intention does matter. Shogeg and all that.
Right.
Okay, you're right. You're right. So I think you are right. So I'm misreading that. So it's thought without action. So it's not really intention.
Right.
It's just thinking about it.
Doesn't
matter. Doesn't do anything. Right.
Right.
It's just thinking. You know, thinking bad thoughts. You need to not kula lebetel shomala. That's up to God to look at and judge what your thoughts are inside. Okay. So Pshat's telling us. However, he's saying that there's an exception to that rule. A machshava that does not involve an action, you can still be held guilty in the case of Edim Zomim. That's what the Torah is telling us. The Torah says, Vasitem lo kasher zaman. Right? You do what the aid had planned.
But he did take an action. He testified falsely.
That comes the proof that he has done that. But you've claimed guilty. He's trying to argue that you're claimed guilty because of what he had planned to do. Because if it actually comes to fruition, it actually happens. You know, the accused actually, in the case of a capital case, is put to death. Then we don't punish the Edim Zomimin. It's kasher zaman v'lo kasher asa. That's very strange halacha in Edim Zomimin.
Wait, can you say that halacha again?
Well, say that once more.
The witness comes and says, you are guilty of a capital crime. We saw you do it. Lighting fires on Shabbos. Other witnesses say, no, you didn't see that at all. You were somewhere else. And now we say, okay, you witnesses who claim that this person was lighting fires on Shabbos and therefore was guilty, it should be stoned, you get stoned. That's the law of Edim Zomimin. If the witnesses come and say, you lit a fire on Shabbos, court says, that's capital punishment, takes him out, takes the accused down, executes them. Then the other witnesses come and say, no, these guys, the witnesses were lying. We don't punish the Edim Zomimin.
Why not?
Because the Torah says so. I mean, it's kasher zaman lo kasher asa. That's from the Gemara. Bikar amru, that's why it says that harago, the accused is killed, and hagim, the edim zomim are not killed. Very strange halacha, which is worth looking at and why that would be the case.
I don't understand.
You know, you understand what I said, or you understand why that would be true?
Why would it be true? Because the point is they were scheming and they got either way. Why does it matter what happened? If this is like, they still did the wrong thing.
So the underlying sort of the Ameh HaMitzvot, is to say that we assume that God's watching over all of this. And that Hashem is not going to let the innocent go unpunished. And not going to punish the guilty. That if that's what happened, that must have been what was supposed to happen. And there must be something else going on that was appropriate. I think that's a good question. I think it's worth looking at that when we get to Parsha Shoftim.
So the idea being that they lied, but in fact, the guy was guilty. He did it, but they didn't know.
We're kind of like, throwing this in God's hand, that if that's the way it worked out, then obviously it should have worked out that way.
Huh.
But
don't forget, when we get to that
I'm not necessarily happy with just leaving it at that, but I'm going to have to because A, that's not our topic, and B, I don't know enough to say anything intelligent.
Okay, but when we get to it, don't forget.
I don't know. Shoftim. It's part of Shoftim.
Okay. We'll wait.
We're only mishpatim. Shotim. There's lots of things to say about that. We'll see if this is interesting.
Okay? So Abba, we'll give you time. You got lots of time.
Okay. So you were rushed to finish here, and this is Gemara discussing this idea of Edim Zomamin, Diburo Delit Be Masahu, that this is just words. They're just saying them. They're not doing anything. We still punish them. Kutani Hatam, and we learned there, Gemara is listing a whole bunch of things of Nizikin, of things we punish for. It's part of this. So the question is, and we say Afagav Delit Be Masah, even though they're not doing anything, Rahmana Kari Masa, God considers that as an action. That there's Zimum, they're planning, we're allowing the court to punish for. You will do this. This is a doing thing. And then Rav Kav Kurman says that the Tohen Tanak Gav is God of the same thing. The God of hasn't done anything. Is the important part. The planning becomes the wrong that they did. Their intentions, even though they're not actually hurting anybody, and in fact the damage they tried to do didn't happen, them still consider that they did something. That when someone claims it was stolen, that's the same thing. The Shomer hasn't done anything. The language is that it was stolen. It's considered though it was stolen.
You're saying because it's a dibur and not a maaseh?
Right.
But here he was talking about being punished for machshava versus maaseh, not dibur. He didn't talk about dibur versus maaseh. But you're saying
there. They go together. How can you be punished for a dibur when I say I'm going to do something? Because with the Tohen Tanak Gav, the Shomer, he makes this point that if the Shomer actually did something, I took your dog and I hid it down in the basement. Then the Shomer is an actual thief. Tohen Tanak Gav is when I have it, it's still where it belongs. It's still in my house, in my living room where the thing was supposed to be. I'm just saying it was stolen. If I actually went and took it and hid it, that's not Geneva. That's not Tohen Tanak Gav at all. That's a different kind of case. The case of Tohen Tanak Gav is purely, I said it was stolen. I swore it was stolen without actually doing anything at all. And I'm considered as though I had stolen it. And which goes into Rav Kuvman's main point in his whole sefer is that the pshat, the text is written, as opposed to lacha, what we know from the Torah Shel Peh, tells us sort of what the ideal law would be if we weren't imperfect mortals. What would it be? And that goes to the ayin tachat ayin that we started out with. It was close to the Sfarno. Eye for an eye. Tachleya ro'i kifi hadina gamor. That perfect justice, that's what you should do. Literally an eye for an eye. Book someone's eye out, your eye should be taken out. That's the appropriate punishment. Kabbalah, and the Torah Shel Peh says, you shall pay money for it, because we can't really estimate, we can't get these sort of things right. So that's impossible. So we can't have the absolute din. But the ideal, the pshat as written is, tells us what the ideal. This is what we're supposed to be thinking about. This is what the intention of the law is supposed to be. And he quotes the first Rashi in Chumash, Rashi Bara Elokim. It uses the name Elokim.
This is like very Rob Cooperman style.
Yes. Right. So we're gonna get deep here. Okay. That this is the idea that it's. That the Rashi points it out, right? That the world is created with the same Elokim, means judgment. Lo namar bar Hashem, wasn't with the same Avaya, the Midah Rachman. Tebchil ala b'machshava, the Briatel b'midat ha-din. That God, the original plan, as it were, for the world should be all b'midat ha-din. Everything should be absolute. Instantaneous judgment. Ra'ashen alam mitkayem, and then God says the world would never last. So he brings the two of them together. The Rachamim and Din, Hanibetiv, Yomasot Hashem Elokim. As the rest of creation is with the two names together. Yomasot Hashem Elokim Eretz Shemayim. So the Pshat of Dibrei Halacha and Rav Kuvman's model is the Alav Machshava of Midat HaDin. It's not the mitzvah itself, it's the Tam HaMitzvah. It's the way we're supposed to think about it. So what does that mean for the Shomer case? This is Rav Kuvman continuing, and Pela Yisrael. So then it's no wonder. That these two rules that are brought here, Edom Zomim and Toin Tanakav, Mufa'im B'shuto Shel Mikra, they're brought together in one unit. The case of Hadin Agamor Shel Torah Peretz Gederat Ayin Tech Ayin, that the Din Agamor, the absolute rules, should literally break free the limitations of Ayin Tech Ayin that we say in Halacha, and it should be made literally. V'igia El Masha Elo Machshava Toshel Adam, and now becomes relevant to what the person was planning and thinking. The person hasn't stolen it, but simply is trying to steal it. Person hasn't actually done anything to the accused. The agent, the witnesses are trying to do it. That case is this case. The Makbil Masha Alav Machshava Shel Kadosh Baruch Hu, parallel to the Alav Machshava, God's original plan for the world. Machshava Sheish Ima Dibur, and that God's Machshava goes to, it becomes as God's Dibur, which becomes God's action. By Yomer, by Baseret HaMamarot, that's what God created the world. Because we're supposed to be like God. That's the ideal world. We'd be just like that. Just like we are commanded to be similar to God in the Tati of Day. So too, can you do that? But Olam Shikulo Din, who Dibur Kamase, Avata Diburacha Kamase. So the ideal case, your words, Sava and Dibur, should be the same as the action. You should be just as guilty for your planning to commit a crime as for the actual crime itself. You really are going to do it, and the fact that you were unable, you know, I am planning to rob a bank. I get it all set, and my car breaks down, and I can't get to the bank. In terms of my inherent guilt, I could still be just as guilty. The fact that I didn't have to rob the bank doesn't change what I was going to do.
But what if it's machshava without planning? Like, oh, you know, I'm walking by a bank, and I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of wish I could just walk in there and like you're thinking about it, but it's like
it's a step in the wrong direction. Okay, so you're right. So Phil's pointing out, no, we're not going to convict anybody for that. That's true. But still, in terms of the absolute din, you've still done something wrong. And that's what you need to realize. Right? L'rak klapei shemayim. That's right. Elagam ben adam l'chaveiro. That should apply as well. In this, Allah machshava, if we were perfect philosopher robots, as it were, not human beings, then we should be just liable for plans.
Well, that's kind of like what we just had last week in the Aseret HaDibrot with like not to be like Mekana, right? Like,
yeah, that's exactly, that's where we're heading. We got one paragraph left and that's exactly right. That's the implication that I always say that I'm obviously teaching well if you know where I'm going with that, because obviously yeah, all the steps are there, okay? I always want to be anticipated. This is good. There's a little hint of that kind of idea that you can be guilty for things that you're planning, even if you don't get away with it, in Toin Tanat Ganav. That's what happened in the Toin Tanat Ganav or the Edom Zomim. They planned, so I tried to steal it, but I couldn't. I still am considered like a Ganav. I pay kafel just as though I had stolen it. But that all these laws of Shomrim keeps us here. Because we think about all these little trivial details of ox and sheep and pits and fields and fire and all that with no relevance at all. Really what it's telling us that fundamentally we are Shomrim for each other. I have to care about your property. You realize that it's yours, it's not mine to take, it's not mine to do anything with. The case of a Shomrim happens every single day we interact with everybody else. Fundamental to that is exactly that, that 10th commandment, Lo tachmod beit re'echa, thou shalt not covet. I have mine, this is yours. And Toin Tanakh reminds us that sleeps in the eyes of Hashem, and in the real world of pure din, machshava rachmana kriya masa, that thinking, that planning it, thinking about it, counts as an action. We can't even be thinking about, okay, I want to take your stuff. I need to respect you and what you have.
So that's that, underlying. You know, you're like, oh, I was so mad. I just wanted to slap him. But now you're saying that's really bad. Sorry.
Say it one more time. What'd you say?
You know, like, sometimes you're like, I don't know, maybe you don't, but I sometimes, like, if I'm feeling really frustrated, like, oh, I just wanted to slap him. I just wanted to slap her. Like, something like that. Like, we live, I don't know, maybe it's just me. Like, I feel like there's a whole parallel universe going on inside my head about all the things that I'm thinking about doing, but then I have my self-control and I social standards.
This
and,
is good, right?
You know, but right. Now it's like, well, that's bad being. Too. So,
well, okay, it's not ideal. Okay, like I said, if you are a perfect, you know, halakhic philosopher robot, then yes, you would immediately think the right thoughts and you would implement the right plans, and everything would be perfect. You're not.
But yes, isn't that like a good thing about being human? Isn't that the whole point? Is that we have choice and we get to have that struggle and we get to choose to do the right thing?
Yes, that is a good thing, right? Sam could have created us as robots without free will, and then it would not be relevant. But yes, the fact that you are thinking about slapping your kids makes you human. But anyone who doesn't understand child abuse never has had kids. I've said that. The fact you don't do it makes you a good human being. But the fact you recognize that the thoughts and facts themselves are an issue is part of that, the recognition there. That's what our lesson is. You're on mute, Phyllis, you're on mute.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've
got a background issue. No, I want to distinguish between DeVito, you know, in the moment having this instinct to slap, as opposed to scheming and planning.
I hear. It's interesting because I keep thinking about like in mental health, when you talk about like concerns about like suicide and things like that, it becomes also very like halacha lamaisa there, you know, like
ideation, is it just suicide,
right, like you said, like it just occurred to me, or it's like, do you have a plan? Because at that point it becomes ki'ilu like a ma'asa.
Right. Good. Yeah. Well, I think I missed the low tech mode shiur. Is there all the dreshim that it's not just what you feel, but what you do? Or is low tech mode really inner thoughts are
so
forbidden?
That goes back to the pshat and drash side of it. The halachic side of it.
Yeah.
You're not chayav, the Rambam said, you're not chayav on the Isser of low tach mode unless you act on it.
Right? Oh, okay.
I want your car and I pressure you to sell it to me, even if I'm not stealing it.
Okay.
I'm over that. But still, you shouldn't do it in the first place, right? The tama mitzvot, the underlying idea of it is still not to want what someone else has. Both sides are true.
Okay. Good. It worked. You wanted to know if it worked. It works.